A bit of a fumbly start, but hi. Hi, it's so good to be here and see all of you and visit with you who are at home. Good morning, I'm Reverend Sonia Milton, and first I want to tell you to wear sunscreen. All those years living in Florida, working in the Caribbean. Or I just like the fashion statement of it, you know. Yeah. When Reverend Kristen invited me to speak this morning, I was very excited because it's nice to be out, isn't it? I've been Zooming messages to Unity Centers in the region, and that's been fun for my living room because I can wear my shorts and be barefoot, but this is better. However, when she asked me, I said, sure, and then I thought, oh, good, and this wasn't that long ago. I thought, I'll just dust off one of my talks I've been doing this year and bring it. But no, she threw the wrench in because, you know, very specific subject we're speaking about this morning. So I got to work hard and to find some new places within my own consciousness and mind to be able to speak to you this morning. So thank you again for letting me be here. These 12 powers are just such a fascinating concept. We can take them in a very loose, fun way, and we can also take them in very deeply to be a path for us to our own awakening. So what is true power? I mean, is it being the strongest and the meanest and the biggest kid on the block? Or is it the ability to control and be a bully to those weaker than us? Having the most money, the most influence, the biggest stick, more guns, more destructive weaponry? We certainly have witnessed a lot of power these last couple of weeks with the athletes in Tokyo at the Olympics. I mean, we have seen power and we've seen strength. But according to Charles Filmer, our Unity co-founder, who, by the way, on the 22nd of this month would have been 147 years old. You see, he believed that he wouldn't die. He thought if he really uses these principles right and these ideas of regeneration, he would regenerate and just keep on living. But fortunately for a lot of us, these bodies do, you know, wear out and fall away, and whatever's left goes on to other realms of being, right? I mean, at least that's what I believe. There's too much going on here for it to be over. So the work that he's left us anyway has been just wonderful and created this whole unity movement. Well, he said, the power that rules the world is within. And I love that. The power that rules the world is within. And I'll get back to that in a little bit. But today I just want to say again, especially for those new to Unity or new to the 12 Powers, this is a series on the 12 Powers called Igniting the 12 Powers Within that you've been working with. And I understand you'll also have a class, so you'll be able to delve more deeply, use it for your meditation, use it for your well-being. And it's kind of fun. The color for power is purple that our platform people were able to so beautifully. And I found this, you know, I have this, which has purple in it. And if I knew about the green, I would have, like, dressed a little differently. Several years ago, I spoke here, I think it was around the holidays, and I wore white. And on the video, you couldn't even see, you know, you couldn't really find me, you know, as much of me as there is, you actually, you know. So Charles Filmer came up with this idea because he was studying the life and teachings of Jesus of Nazareth, and he thought this was a construct that would fit with that, and he thought that these attributes, these powers, can lead to a life of unspeakable joy and glory. Who doesn't want that? And he wrote a book called The 12 Powers of Man, which metaphysically talks of these 12 human attributes, these powers, as they relate to consciousness, evolving consciousness, and acclaiming our divine nature. So this, again, might be new to many of you. And I like to work, you know, I come from a somatic background, working with the body, with the Rolfing work I did, and my yoga practice and all that. So I like to kind of put the 12 together as they relate in the body, and I'm not sure how you're doing it here, but here we are. Is that how you're doing? Oh, great. So I love that faith is right at the top of our heads. It's that center. We have will on the left side, understanding on the right side. We have imagination right in the middle of our head. We have zeal back here, and then today's power, the throat, the power of the word, the power. And of course, love. wisdom, judgment, discernment, order, keeping things in order, strength, elimination, okay, elimination, which is a renunciation or release. Oh, I got them all. And then, of course, life, our generative organs. So purple, throat, Philip the disciple, and that means Philip represents the lover of horses, and they say that horse is a power animal. So that's that part. In a book called How to Use Your 12 Power, Your 12 Gifts from God, the author William Wart writes, the power center in the throat controls all the vibratory energies of the organism to open the door between the formless and the formed, worlds of vibrations pertaining to the expression of sound. Every word that goes forth receives its specific character from the power faculty. And Mr. Fillmore, the mind and body of man, woman, human, have the power of transforming energy from one plane of consciousness to another. And that's the part I like. That's what's really interesting to me. This idea of transforming energy, I think it's everything. It's a choice we make every single moment, consciously, but probably mostly unconsciously. This thought, this idea, this song, this person, this event, this news flash, does it depress me, upset me, delight me, teach me? Am I developing a sense of impartiality and equanimity? Or am I thrown kind of hither and yon by all that appears outside myself? Who am I really? What am I? Am I just a victim of what comes at me and to me? Or do I have that choice to choose what I'm going to incorporate? Am I constantly any breeze or hurricane or fire that's about to blow through? What does that do to me and my inner life? So I want to look at what I want us to look at what one of the great master teachers had to tell us about power, especially about true power. And I'm going to read from the Gospel of John. Now, I usually, when I'm going to do something with the Bible, I go, if it's in several of the Gospels, I go to Mark first, because Mark was the first written, and I feel like it's the most accurate, even though it was written, what, 40, 50 years after the actual death of Jesus. So whether this even happened or not, we don't know. It doesn't even matter. What we do know is there's so much truth in these teachings, and that's what we really hold on to. So this is the story of the feeding of the 5,000. It's in all four Gospels, and I'm going to read from John, which was Charles Fillmore's favorite gospel. He called it the spiritual metaphysical gospel. The other three are called the synoptic gospels because they come from the same root. John came from some other planet. So listen. After this, which was, you know, healing the sick and, you know, all the great work he did. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him because they saw the signs that he was about, that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. He was going, you know, he was usually going up the mountain, up to Jerusalem, up in consciousness, Charles Fillmore would say, if we're looking at it metaphysically. We're really good at that, though, just making stuff metaphysical. You know, sometimes we enter into that metaphysical malpractice sometimes, but, you know, we can take it back. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, see Philip, he's the guy this week, he said to Philip, where are we going to buy bread for these people to eat? He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get just a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, there's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and, remember, 2 fish. But what is that among so many people? Jesus said, make the people sit down. Now, there was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. You know, one of the other gospels said, 5,000 plus women and children. And you know, historically, we know that 5,000 was the number of men in a legion in the military. And at that time, as you know, Israel and the Jewish people were under Roman rule. So that was sort of what they were struggling with. And they were hoping, of course, that Jesus would be this savior as King David was. Let him be the new Messiah. Let him bring us this new order. Let him fight and beat them and do all that needs to happen so we can be free, which wasn't the kind of guy he was he? Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated, so also the fish as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." And now listen. Those are my words, not here. When Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. That is so beautiful to me. That is just so clear to me. And, you know, again, especially I find this in the Old Testament, people are trying to describe an experience that they had, and they didn't know how to do it. So sometimes they would inflate it to just make their point across, and probably that is so with this particular thing. But in this passage, doesn't Jesus seem to be very superhuman? He's able to have the ability to fabricate matter, taking the equivalent of one family's lunch and multiplying it to be enough for an astonishing number of people, at least 5,000 plus women and children. And as the disciple Philip says, the cost of such an endeavor would be astronomical. So not only does every person there have enough to have their fill, there's even leftovers. Pretty astonishing. In this Gospel of John, 7 miracles are performed, and 2 of them are right here, the feeding of the 5,000, and right after this is when Jesus appears to walk on water to his disciples. So at this point in the passage, it must surely mean that Jesus channeled the absolute power of the divine. He could perform miraculous feats of power whenever he wanted to. And that the crowd no doubt took that message after eating, of course, you know, that he was to be worshipped, that he was the Messiah, that the prophet who had come to save them and to save Israel. Well, we thought students are not immune to this interpretation of the miracle. The feats of power are proof of the majesty of Jesus. In many ways, those of us schooled in traditional Christianity, we were taught this, and arguably it's still the same interpretive lens most use, that he just created this great miracle. After all, these images of power and awe litter this passage, this power to inspire and to dazzle, the sheer size of the crowd, the immense need, far surpassing anything, you know, that one person would have, the power of generosity, the power to control a crowd, the power over matter, the power over nature, and later, as I said, the power to walk on water. How can we not be dazzled by this explosion of power in this passage? We may have been so dazzled by the shininess of this, the glittering majesty of the miracles, like we heard the miracles that Lisa sang about, that we missed this response in verse 15. I'll read it again. When Jesus realized that they were about to come and take him by force to make him a king, he withdrew again to the mountain by himself. This moment when he could have claimed the strength of the multitudes, he could have increased the numbers of followers, greater numbers. He laid aside the power offered him, and he retreated into solitude. Makes you think a little bit about some of our leaders and our potential leaders and our past leaders, if that's the road or the path that they're taking. He chooses this moment. He allows this moment. The power inherent in what he could have. And he lets it slip by. So the point of this miracle, I believe, is not in the fact of the power of what he did, but instead with how he understood power itself. Throughout the ministry, he constantly demonstrates that contrary to the human understanding and visions of power, the divine way of power brings justice to the oppressed and beauty to creation. It's not a new message. It's the same message that the prophets of old, of the Old Testament, of the Hebrew Bible, taught and spoke and declared. The followers dismiss this mission. They want a prophet. They have a human desire for vengeance. This messianic expectation was that there would be a new king, someone like King David, who would come in on a white horse and free them all in the way that had always been. And he was bringing something brand new. He was bringing a new message. He was bringing this idea of where the kingdom of God truly is. The kingdom of God. The kingdom of heaven is within. And if there's one message from these whole Gospels, you see, as I've told you many times, those of you who know, I have a Jewish background, so even saying the word Jesus, like, took me a long time. And that process I had to get to where I am now, where he is this incredible teacher for me, along with others, but what he brought, what he said, what he taught. They forget, the crowd forgets that the prophet only brings divine will, has a vision of something wider, reestablishing the harmony that was written to the fabric of creation from the very beginning. Jesus asserts that power, true power, lies in humbly surrendering our individual desires for what is greater and larger. And it's only with that surrender that we can finally understand that we are all interdependent and how our survival depends on the survival of all of creation. Fires, pandemic, demonstrations, divisions, it's quite an interesting time. So by focusing on the glitter and the display of power, we miss this the other miracle of being completely aligned with the divine will. When creation is in harmony, all have enough, all are fed, all have exactly what they need. There is even leftovers. And that's our prayer, isn't it? It's our prayer for humanity at this junction of time, this time of humanity. I mean, those of us of a certain age, we didn't think this would be what we had at this time of our lives. I mean, we fought for justice and we marched and we did and embodied all these things that there's something else going on, and we're not in charge, are we? I remember the first time I heard the blues. I was a teenager. I was in high school. I had a weekend job working in a folk music coffee house as a waitress. It was so exciting. We had Joni Mitchell come through. We had Jimmy Buffett. We had George Carlin, you know, it was just like exciting, these people. In fact, the owner of the club, it was called the Flick Coffee House in Coral Gables, Florida, he told Joni Mitchell, "Look, honey, nobody wants to hear those songs. Sing something people know." She was in her little heels and a skirt. I mean, she was very formal and very, very lovely person, of course. So I kind of remember that. So the first time I heard the blues was there, and John Lee Hooker was a guest artist. I didn't know who he was. I know he's from this area, but I didn't know that. And I don't remember the song, I don't remember the words, but I remember this feeling, this palpable sense that something sacred was about to happen, that I was going to witness something really important to me, So I didn't like sit. I had this little alcove where I'd sit and watch stuff when I should have been waiting on the tables. But the song began gently and softly, creating this delicate atmosphere of this cool calm that he could do. And I just knew that this gentleness was intentional because it was going to change. But I was commanded to listen, to surrender to the song with my full attention. And I felt everything just relax, you know, just to ease like we do, you know, in our meditation. And then I heard it, this single note that was like a bullwhip crack across the calm, and this note just went through my body. I could feel it all the way to my fingertips. And there was so much power in it, and it was followed by silence. And as the song continued, I was held in the thrall of this calm and tension, silence and sound. I was experiencing this real true master of his craft, demonstrating that power is not always in the flurry of the notes and the music, but in the magic that happens, the miracle when the sound and the silence play off each other in just the right way. And I know our musicians know what I'm talking about. There's something very magical happens when we allow space for these elements to interact. It's very holy. And to witness it is just extraordinarily wonderful and privileged. And I remember that, you know, there was other stuff going on I was upset about because, you know, I was 18 and 17 or whatever, and, you know, what was all the things that I thought were important. But by the time the song ended, this calm, this peace, it was something I hadn't felt before, and I learned something really important that night, that power isn't dominance. True power is knowing that value of silence, of withholding, of creating space. I heard an interview with Terry Gross a couple of years ago, and she was interviewing this man who was some expert on silence. And he said something that I remember, which was, silence is not the absence of sound, it's the absence of noise. Isn't that great? So when you're sitting and you're in your practice and the birds are singing or something's whirling, you know, it's part of it. We include it all. So it's only when we accept that we are not all powerful that we can understand and soften into this mysteries of true power, of divine power. I shared something earlier that I didn't think I was going to talk about, but, you know, you give me a microphone and an audience and, you know, there you go, huh? I had an experience a couple of weeks ago I wanted to share, and it was one of those, you know, those nights when you can't sleep? And it's like, it could be a dark night of the soul, it could be I just can't sleep. Well, this I called the light night of the soul, and it was curious to me because I was a little disturbed. There were a couple of relationships that I was concerned about, and, you know, it was stirring up in me a little bit. And all night long, I felt like I was being blessed, worked, you know, healed. Because what I saw, and I, you know, the hours just go by in something like that, you know. I mean, it was 6 in the morning when I finally fell asleep for an hour or so. I had this experience and this realization that the reason I was having these challenges was because I brought it to me. I drew it to me out of, and these were old things. This was not something current, but it still was bothering me, that it was like an old, you know, a healing challenge, you know, there's all these things we can call it, dysfunction, whatever, a need, a black hole. And I realized that that's not who I am anymore. And I actually, in the process, I didn't feel like I was doing it, but I felt like the wound closed and that those things could no longer affect me, because all that work we do, all the classes and the sermons and the meditation and sitting through the pandemic and, you know, that it works. You know, it doesn't always seem like it at the time, but then all of a sudden there's an aha. Do you ever get that? It's like, oh, it's come together. And since then, this was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I've just felt different. You know, like my my lens is cleaner because I'm not affected. Now, I don't want to say that too loudly because, you know, when you ask for, you know, like I've been asking for patience lately, so you know what I'm getting? Lots of opportunities for patience. So just saying, God, just saying, give me a break. I'm doing my work, you know? William Wharton writes, power is the ability to transform energy from one plane to another. Silence, thought, word, and manifestation are stages of power in action. That's like the creative process, isn't it? We get the thought in mind, and then that manifestation. Power is the ability to change thoughts and feelings. It's not for controlling others. So, you know, I got to give you the takeaway, right? Because I can't just keep talking. I mean, I could, but, you know. So for me, it boils down to four things. Being as clear as I can with myself and knowing that my word is formative, that what I say makes a difference, that power center in my throat, that what I say makes a difference. And sometimes we just have to suit up. We might not even be there yet, but we act as if, as we're moving into it. Second is gratitude. I mean, what's the first thing he did before he distributed the food in the story? Gave thanks. I bless this. I give thanks to this before it goes out. Thirdly, withdrawing to the mountains. We have mountains around here, but you also have your own room, you know, whatever, wherever that is, wherever we are, God is. Wherever we are, in an instant, we can arrive. I listened to some different meditation teachers, and one says, arrive immediately. And not with that tone. Arrive immediately. Okay, I'm here. I'm here. And you're here. Isn't this cool? We're actually here in person. Withdrawing to the mountain, going apart for a while, time in the silence, recharging, remembering the source of power is within. And lastly, fourthly, humility. Remembering that bond between power and humility, you know, deepening in, through the discipline of surrendering, you know. I love hearing, you know, actors, famous great actors always say, oh, my kids just think I'm like, they don't watch my movies, they think I'm just, you know. It's like we need that balance. We think we're so hot. We're not. You know, we're just same. We're all the same boat. We're on the same. We're bozos on the same bus. Do you remember Fireshine Theater? Anybody? They were it. They were it. Bozos on the same bus. So we have an affirmation, something that we can say and remember. So we're not talking out loud, is that right? Just kind of whisper to yourself. I'll say it out loud. We'll do it twice. You just say it to yourself. My source of power is divine power, and I manifest my divine power through my words, thoughts, and creative expression. I came up with that. Pretty cool, huh? I had to do it earlier in the week because I had to send it in. Who knew, you know? Because by, like, Saturday night, everything changes when you're doing this kind of work. Let me tell you, you know? Sometimes you're up all night because it keeps changing. Could you show that again? Oh, no, I have it here somewhere. Yeah, let's do it again. Thanks. Thank you, Charlie. It's so good to see you. It's good to see everybody. My source of power is divine power, and I manifest my divine power through my words, thoughts, and creative expression. So, shalom, namaste, all is well. It's a pleasure being here, and so be it.